yesterday and today, we've all heard about how students say, we want to speak more, but we do not really have any opportunities. And we've heard about how they don't use much English outside of class, how they say that. And we heard about how they don't really seem to have much of a social network that involves them using English. So I mean, the question really remains, what the heck are these people doing? I mean, what is it that they're actually doing when they're not sitting in the classroom? So we've also talked about, well, so basically this is the question that I'll be answering. Are we focusing on all the places where they say they do use English that is not within the physical realms of the AMP? And Lloyd's already talked to him, Lloyd's sitting over there, told us about the use of English, you know, in the workplace. So basically, I'm covering the entire rest. I'm getting all the leftovers to cover. Now, I'm not a teacher. I'm not particularly familiar with the curriculum and all the things that wonderful things that you do within the AMP. So I'll be just focusing on telling you what we found, what the students said. Your job will be to take care or think about the other part of research question one and research question two. How does this fit in with what's actually happening inside the classroom? So I'll leave it up to you, and you can report back to me at the end. All right. So in order to establish all the places that they say they use English, and as Ellen already pointed out, a large segment of our interviews was actually dedicated to asking them, so where do you use English? And that's basically what we are looking at. So I was looking at the interview data and the field note data that we have coded in Vivo, as been explained before. And I was looking at the language networks that were drawn during the interviews, at least the ones that, well, at least parts of the ones that are available, because there are quite a lot. And I did want to go home that night, but I was trying to look at them as well. And in addition to that, I was also looking at the descriptions of the out-of-campus interactions. So we collected all these out-of-campus interactions, and somebody sat down and actually said, where was it, who did they talk to, what did they talk about, what they were trying to achieve. And I mean, I don't know if you can imagine, we had 152 participants, we had 4 interviews with most of them. It's a lot of data. And it took a long time to put it all together. And basically, trying to come up with, what we came up with is a mix of domains where they use English, of people who they use English with, and also things that they do, like what are they trying to achieve when they use English, speech acts, if you like. So plenty of different variables all over the place, and I've just chucked a few on this PowerPoint slide, absolutely no order ranking theory behind this whatsoever, and this is only a segment. I mean, I've had to delete plenty of others, because there's only so much room on the PowerPoint slide. And the complete list will follow at some stage, I hope. And there's, you know, a great variety, lots of different places. I don't know if anything of this is surprising to anyone of you, probably not. We don't really have to spend that much time on this. What I can say, generally speaking, the places or the things that were most frequently mentioned is watching TV. Most of them watch TV. Most of them watch movies. Most of them will fill in a form at some stage of the year. Most of them will be making appointments. Talking to friends, talking to family, talking at work. Talking when you go shopping. Shopping is one of those places that somehow popped up all over the place. But clearly, huge variation in terms of the quality of the interactions that they're reported to have. So with regard to shopping, for example, we have participants like Hannah who say, like, you know, actually, you don't really have to speak a lot when you go shopping. Maybe how much here, good day. Or ask a question like, where is something if you really, really need it to? But for some other people, this going shopping, that was the one place where they could actually practice. That was a learning strategy for them to go up to a shop assistant asking them questions. So, you know, emotionally completely different kind of an approach to it. And there were the other ones who report having these big, massive, long discussions with the shop assistant about returning clothing or asking lots of questions, or, you know, the quality just is really, really different. I mean, even watching TV, some people sat down and watched the news, were kind of hoping for the best to understand what was going on, and others were sitting there with a dictionary looking up all the books. I mean, you know, it's just a very vast variety of different approaches that people were reporting. Another thing that that we found was most people really, they did have someone that they could contact if they really, really needed to. So there are, most people had either a spouse or another family member, or in some cases a child, that they could use to get help for difficult interactions, or, you know, even an interpreter if they needed to. So very few really reported going anywhere and like, well, nothing happened, they couldn't do it. They all had some kind of, either they had help or they had some kind of mechanisms to get something done. Maybe not exactly what they wanted to, but at least do what they had to do. Something that was mentioned by Pam yesterday, very few participants actually reported doing any writing outside MEP. So one very keen participant who was writing an online blog, if I remember correctly. Few were writing journals, more like for personal use, but not much else. And then, you know, the things I write might be a little bit obvious, but large proportion of our population, they were female. As was pointed out, they all got pregnant somehow, or they had little kids. I don't know how. It wasn't me. And clearly, I mean, that requires interacting with a doctor at some stage or another. So those participants clearly they had a lot of interactions with doctors, with midwives at the hospital, and the same goes for most of the 55 plus, I don't want to call them elderly, that is probably not politically correct. but yeah, people from that group also reported to go to the doctor much. And lots of the many, or few of the pregnant women also pointed out that they don't really have much contact with the community beyond that. Like, I think there was one participant who said, I think she was Chinese, saying, in my culture, when you're pregnant, you stay at home, that's what you do. So, I mean, there's that. Then the other point I wanted to make is, Beth was talking about pronunciation issues yesterday, and how that is a problem. But the problem also goes the other way. Many people report having a hard time with the Australian accent. And I can't blame them. Well, no. Because, you know, then they learn overseas, and then they have an American teacher, or they're used to the British accent, and then they come here, and they really don't sound anything like those. And it is, you know, a little bit disconcerting at first to start to get used to it. But it's not only just the Australian accent, it's also other non-native accents that they have problems with. And always saying, way too fast. So having to tell them to slow down, one of the most successful strategies I think they have been using. And this is one of the reasons, or one of the things that then leads to frustration on their side if there's situations like that. If they're not being understood, or if they can't understand, there's... Remember, all we're looking, it's a study was done in, oh, I don't know, 80s and 90s in Europe. They were looking at clarification strategies by migrants. And they were pointing out, and I'm sure many other clever people since, and there's only so many times you can say, pardon, excuse me, without being rude and without disrupting the flow of the conversation completely unnecessarily. So you always have to make a decision, like, do I really need to know what he just said, or can I just smile? So it's a very tricky little thing that they have to negotiate there. Then the other issue that came up a lot, and this has been mentioned a lot as well, is this perspective of one's own level of English being an obstacle to achieve things. So it has been mentioned, level of English prevents me from getting a good job. And the data I was looking at was also saying my level of English keeps me from making friends or making connections with anyone in the society. And I think Dan here is expressing this notion relatively well. Now Dan is a relatively young guy. I think he's in the age bracket from, 19 to 25? He's from Egypt, and I don't know how long he's been here, but he's saying, I'm not really very comfortable speaking in English. Like, okay, I can speak easily. I'm not that baby that's still learning how to speak. I have thoughts in my mind. I can organize these thoughts. And I can give the best talk ever, but in Arabic. So I want to be the same person in English. I want to be like, I love saying jokes, but I couldn't. And I don't know what he wants to say then. But again, we have this theme that has been coming up again and again of having this reduced personality, Dan also is talking about that this is leading to there being a barrier. How can I make friends when I can't actually be a person? Really? Okay, we don't need those. And another issue that has been coming up a lot in the data is talking on the phone and how much of a problem that is. So here we have Charles, who's been taking the initiative of sending out emails about jobs. And one of them was actually, or a few of them were actually calling him back. And he's saying, it was the most of the things that I scared. Because when my phone ring, I am scared in the moment, but I use the telephone. And the academic researcher asked, did they call you first? Haven't they called you? Did they say that in the email? And then, no, I received yesterday a voice message on my cell phone, but when I hear the message, I couldn't understand, for example, the name of the person, because it was an accent very hard. Telephone, very scary. I don't know how you feel about telephones. I'm still scared of them. I think it was a very, something that we really have to keep in mind as well. The same issue came up a lot. Another participant, Maria, she is a young woman from Sierra Leone. And she really had such a hard time, she even had to contact someone else in order to solve the problem. So she had got a tooth removed. So yeah, sometimes I have some problem in sometimes it's the listening. If I'm over the phone, I can't catch what they're talking. Like last week when I took off my teeth and someone called me, he was telling me where he is, it was Circular Quay. He was saying the wharf, but I can't catch it. I have to call the police and give them my mobile and they listen and to know what he was saying, you know. Isn't that crazy? Because she actually created herself a situation where she had to use the phone even more than she did before. But it is just really difficult for them to use the phone, both in terms of being able to understand. Because, you know, you don't have the visual. The visual is really important for them. It's very, very scary kind of interaction you have to do on the phone. Okay, quick breakdown according to the patterns we have found. So this is very crude table across the different sensory levels. Main point here again, shopping, most commonly, frequently mentioned all over the place for the pre-sensories and the sensory ones. And talking to neighbors seemed to be quite important. Centrelink was mentioned a few times, mostly in the sense of saying, I can now fill in the form by myself. Great sense of achievement there for them, so that's great. And a few people being involved in their religious communities quite a bit, finding good social networks there. Generally speaking, if we're being very, very crude here, and most of them report not having much of complex interactions, but more of a limited nature and formulaic. On the other end of the spectrum, you have the sensory three. For them, whereas the pre-sensory ones, they often say that I'm going to a doctor who can speak my native language, or I'm taking an interpreter with me. And that often stayed probably more stable throughout the term of the data collection. And SESWI 3, they said, okay, I went to the doctor and I took an interpreter with me just in case, but I realized I don't actually need them or need that person. So they started to be more independent in that sense and start going to the doctor and the medical checkups by themselves. And SESWI 3, there are also more people who did things like volunteering and joined social groups, like or community classes, and kind of often sewing and drawing and all sorts of things. And generally, again, very crude, you can say, more complex interactions and more reading and writing. We also had a quick look at differences across age groups, and I've taken the liberty of just chucking everything in the middle together, everything between 25 and 54. Obviously, there are some differences there, but it's relatively marginal. Yeah, again, if we do the extreme comparison with the younger groups, they reported having quite a lot of random interactions. Apparently, they were just hanging out on the train, just chatting to the people there, almost commenting, elderly people are really quite chatty, aren't they? And they got some practice that way. And also more involved in further or additional study. The group in the middle, the probably most interesting ones are quite involved in getting their driver's license. They are more involved in work communication or doing the job search, having to deal with all the looking for a job, doing the job application, doing the interview bits. They are also the age group that has the kids, so they have to do with the childcare and with the teachers and everything involved with that. And they also do more dealings online, so the internet is a little bit more important for this group. Facebook is one of the things they do. Paying the bills, email, chatting, all these things. And a solicitor was mentioned a few times. So this is the age group where they, once they can afford to, they sit down and they buy themselves a house. So they have to do a lot, and some legal dealings as well. And as a poor contrast with the older age group, for them, neighbors, again, is proportionally one of the most commonly mentioned group that they talk to. And again, the religious groups as well is very important for them, and volunteering as well, as was pointed out by Vicky before. Okay. Now, I thought it might be interesting to super highlight a few of the more individual issues, and not necessarily very... can't say that everybody said that, but there were a few people who mentioned these. So, for example, going to a restaurant can be quite a scary experience, reading the menu. So Irene here says, but when I go with my friends to the restaurant, if I want to order something from the menu, I find it most difficult. For example, when I went out with my boss for dining, I got the English menu. I did not understand the costs and the dishes there and the name of the dishes. And I found it quite embarrassing. And I find it quite difficult talking with the waitresses or the waiters. This is not the only occasion, I think restaurant interactions were mentioned 3 or 4 times. Somebody else was saying she was having a meal and the waitress came up and asked something, and I'm not entirely sure what she assumed that she was asking, but basically she just said yes and suddenly her dinner disappeared from in front of her. She was not particularly impressed but also too embarrassed to actually do anything about it. Another issue, technical vocabulary. Well, this is a guy who had to go to the garage and had a hard time just understanding all the technical words. Probably a very common problem. I would have the same problem even in English. I just don't know machinery, but it can be a difficult situation. Doing difficult speech acts or doing difficult things in the shop. So this participant, she had to return a TV. She bought this TV. After 7 days, she realized it didn't really work. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And had to go and wanted to return it, but the shop assistants weren't particularly interested in helping out. So the interpreter helps her out here a bit, says, when I went to the shop, they said there is enough problem with it. They say cannot change. When I went home, it still doesn't work properly. Because when I went back to the second time, they said I probably have to send it for repair. So I only bought it for 15 days. Shop asked me to go and send it for repair. Because if I know English well, I could have confronted the shopkeeper. So again, you know, this frustration with not actually being able to stand up for yourself and deal with the situation, or also the knowledge of their rights within Australia that, you know, they couldn't really defend themselves or get what is right. Job interviews, oh, scary for everyone. In this particular case, the participant has been applying for a job for a sales position and was reporting that they had to do role plays. And saying that pretty much, you know, it is a very scary situation. You have like 3 minutes to give the situation and you have to do something. It's scary enough in English, but having to do it in a second language, not having had any sales experience, it was like, wow. Very, very scary for her. And making a complaint, and this is a situation taken from somebody talking to her husband. It's maybe a little bit of a cross-cultural pragmatic issue as well. She's saying, and I guess the time I was not well, actually had been sick, maybe a headache or something. Chinese always say, I'm not comfortable. I always remember that I say, I'm not comfortable. So my husband say, oh, no response. So later I get angry, I say, I'm not well, why are you, you have to show some concern. And he say, well, you say you're not comfortable. You say, you should make yourself comfortable. he didn't tell me you're not sick, you're not, he didn't. So later I realized maybe the language. And this is the last one that I just happened upon. And reading job ads and finding your way around town is something that is really important to them as well. So we have here, he's in the 55 plus age group, he's looking for a job. And he has been looking at a job for newspapers. And the teacher researcher asks, did he understand the things, the little job ads in the newspapers? And he says, no, I did not understand. Teacher researcher says, no, it's like a shorthand, isn't it? I just like, yes, and then if I get the good word, and then I will remember, and then I will get a number of a phone, and then I will ring. And they ask, where is the place? But it's very hard for me. Like, this is like, I don't know the area, but I don't know the place. So, he didn't even know where to go, right? And again, having to do this thing on the phone, but I don't think he cared about that very much. Okay. Now, one of the main places that was mentioned, other than work, was talking to friends. So we thought we'd have a bit of a closer look at what's happening when people talk to their friends. So people from CESPE 1 and CESPE 2, they say they mostly have one friends, which is a good thing. And the research has shown that it's very important for the social, cultural, or social, psychological acculturation to hang out with people from your own cultural background. So that's not a bad thing at all. And people from CESPE 2 also say that seem to have proportionally the most English-speaking friends and generally make more friends within the AMEP. I have to remember, though, only two centers involved here, so might have screwed the data a little bit. Overall, singles seem to have more English-speaking friends, probably not necessarily a surprise. Generally, from participants from China seem to have fewer friendships with English speakers, and for women, making friends with or having contact to their partner's friends is also, they say that more often than the other way around. And for some reason, it seems like people who are 55 or more years of age do not make that many friends at the AMEP. Now, we always think that it's really, really important to make friends with Australians. But it's also really important for them, again, to highlight the importance of making friends with other migrants. And Alina here says that, because you don't have a social life to the beginning because you couldn't show to the other people what kind of person you are. They don't know you, and you couldn't explain, you couldn't speak good English language. They reject you because the people don't have patience to understand you. And it's totally different now, what I said. It's totally different when you have friends with other migrants because they are the same thing. So once you start to have friends between the migrant people, you feel more confident for yourself. And once you start to speak better, you can see that the people accept you. So once again, AAP doing a great job of bringing together all the people, all the migrants, to foster friendships across. And this is really important for their settlement experience ultimately. Oh yeah, and this is a nice little example for people having a little bit of a struggle making or figuring out how to make friends in a different culture, because there are cultural differences in terms of how you make friends to begin with. This woman comes from China, and she has been feeling very lonely, and she was contemplating going back to China, and somebody told her, oh, why don't you meet friends with your neighbors or the locals? And she's pointing out that I don't actually know how to do that. Where I come from, at night, we would go out for a walk, and we would meet other people, and we would make friends with them. In Australia, after 8 p.m. Good luck finding anyone. And other Chinese people have been pointing that out to me as well, like, you know, where they come from, you go out at midnight for a meal, and here, nothing is closed after 8, if you're lucky. And, you know, it's a... It's really something that is worth considering or thinking about, that there might be some people just might not really know how to do this very well. It might not really know how to approach the issue. And there's cultural differences in doing things like I was socializing all over the place. So for example, I did my PhD in New Zealand at Wellington. Wellington's Dingtonians prize themselves for their coffee and they love going to cafes. I think there are probably more cafes in Wellington. There are pubs. So you want to catch up with someone, you go out for coffee. Now lots of New Zealanders also move to London and hang out there. Now London, when you want to hang out with someone and catch up with someone, you have to go to the pub. And all of a sudden they found themselves going to the pub every day instead of to a cafe and drinking a heck of a lot more beer than they did before. Which is fine. I think for most New Zealanders they can handle it pretty well, but you know, if you're not into drinking, then that could be a little bit of a social issue at some stage. Okay. So the other thing that we were looking at is the use of English within the family. Many of them were married to English speakers, but yeah, also looking at those who weren't, who were coming together with their spouses. So if you're coming together as a family unit, when you all speak the same language, then you usually speak one together with the partner or the children. Many cases there was a mix going on because you had your sister-in-law was living there, married to an Australian, and suddenly you had to use English with the nephews and nieces and with other parts of members of the family. And once you stayed there for a little while, some participants report to be using their migrant children as their motivation to learn English or as practice partners or as language informants. So, you know, sit in front of the television like, why was that funny? Or what does that word mean? With the children as well. And how the children react to that sort of thing is very, it differs quite a bit. So some children, they're probably obliged. Some children tell their mom to shut up. And generally some people just do not like talking English with their parents. So they either go, you know, they start talking English and they say, no, this is their home. I want to speak my language here. I get to speak English all day. This is the place where I can practice my first language. So there was this one participant who was saying that apparently my son speaks English very well. My neighbors told me. Like, never speaks to me, but my neighbor said he's doing very, very well. He's a bit of, you know, also involved with embarrassment about their parents' level of English. And as always, many of these of a number of these people who come over, they have a spouse or a partner that is more proficient in English, or who they just allow to do most of the things. So you come over with the Chinese couple comes over, she's going to AMEP, he's the one who's doing the work, he's the one who's dealing with the bank, he's the one who's dealing with whatever have you, and can help out to some degree. Probably a bit more complex with regard to the things that happened in mixed families, so where you have one spouse that is a migrant and one spouse that is of English language background. Or I think there was also one couple where she was Chinese and he was French, and their only language in common was English. So in those constellations, you usually most use English at home, the partners, but also with the children. We talk about that more in a second. And also with the extended family. So they do, you marry an Australian, you usually end up not just, you know, with one spouse, but with a little bit of a family and a bit of a language network, or opportunities to practice, if you like. Once again, we have this issue coming up on a regular basis of having problems expressing, doing emotional talk, talking about deep feelings, talking about relationship issues. And again, the sense of having a reduced personality that all of you was pointing out. That is really quite taxing and quite trying. Only a few of the spouses actually did bother to learn the participants or one. I think it's similar to Ingrid's study on couple talk, but I'm not entirely sure. Maybe not. I should have said that. there was one of my participants, apparently. She said, like, actually, my husband, she would like to learn Thai, but she didn't allow him to. She wanted to learn English first, and he can learn Thai later, so he was banned. Apparently she was relying on him being lazy, which turns out he was, so he didn't get it. He didn't push the topic too much. Issue that came up with them, I mean, most of those women married to an Australian or married to an English-speaking partner reported they were not particularly happy with the amount of support they were getting. So they were saying that their partners did not want to correct them, for example, and they wanted to be corrected. They didn't want to correct them because they didn't want to offend. There was this one couple apparently that had a bit of a crisis because he didn't want to offend her somehow. Or they're too tired, they come home late at night, and they just got like, yeah, whatever, we deal with this another time. And there's one participant that says that, yeah, my boyfriend actually thinks my accent is cute, so he wants me to keep it. I mean, this is a similar issue that also comes up in the L1 couple married partner thing. So if your spouse is more proficient and you want to use them as someone who helps, or to help you learn English, and they're not necessarily always doing what you want them to do. So there was one participant in that constellation who asked a question, and he was just like, oh, look it up in the book. And she didn't think that was very helpful. But obviously, I mean, there's always these issues of she didn't think it was helpful. Maybe he thought it was helpful because they have a different conception of language learning, and all these tensions that come up because of that. And others say they have supportive partners, so one of the things that some of them do is make the migrant answer the phone. One of the rules in the house, you answer the phone always, all the time. Or you have in-laws that are taking care of them a bit more. Again, we have a few participants that indicate that they do rely on their partners for most of their interactions. And for some of them, though, there is a bit of a change over time because they do get better. And they do gain confidence and they do more things by themselves. And this lack of progress and language-related shyness can also be a big source of tension between the partners. So we have a participant here who was meeting her husband's friends, and she was not really able to interact with them. And she was getting upset, and he was getting upset, and everybody ended up being really upset. Because, again, social talk is not just something that you do at work, it's also something that you do at parties, and it's something that you do with other human beings. And it's sometimes really difficult to know what to talk about and to interact with people. Things though get really, really complicated once children are involved in those constellations. Because you know, you have someone who speaks a different language and someone who speaks a dominant language, and you used to speak English with them, and then you could get a child, or you bring a child into the marriage, and what do you do? So there's often a lot of mixing going on. So in this case, this participant, she is Thai, she had kids from a previous relationship, and at home, they use a mix. I think she speaks in Thai with her son, but English with her daughter, and they swap back and forth all the time, especially when the husband comes in. So this is a very normal topic, and she says, reason for that is, so I don't have to explain. She's basically just sick and tired of him feeling like, oh, what's going on? So they just talk in English to get over and done with it. But then there are also these other scenarios where you have a woman here who's from wherever they speak Tagalog, this is Philippines. And she came, she married this guy, he had already kids from a previous relationship, she had a few kids, and she had, I think, a kid as well before who spoke Tagalog. But then they got together and they made the rule, in this house we speak English, because we have these other kids who don't speak Tagalog, they will feel excluded. This way we make sure everybody understands what's going on all the time. As a result, her son, who used to be able to speak her native language, he doesn't understand anymore. And while, you know, this is one of those issues that probably will come back to haunt her, that will create probably tensions in the family later on once she's marginalizing the mother, marginalizing the migrant as a person who's able to interact with the family in any way. She's the only one who doesn't speak English very well. She can't really talk to her children anymore in that language. And it's one of those things that probably is a bit of a disaster to come. We can skip those, they're not particularly exciting. So overall, some other observations that can be made. So there's a huge variation with regard to the extent to which students use English outside the AMEP and across the groups and within and all the way, big variation all over the place. Most of the participants have found ways to handle interactions outside the AMEP in one way or the other, not necessarily successfully, but somehow they do. I find that quite admirable, I have to say. Language level perceived as an obstacle is this: to make friends, to interact, to be a socially valid human being. It's something that you find across all sensory levels. And it's something I think that any migrant experiences to a certain degree. It's something that I experienced. All these issues that were mentioned by the migrants is something that I have experienced as well when I moved to Great Britain. Not being able to handle groups, not being able to communicate, not feeling like the person that you were. And I think this is a very very common theme, not necessarily something that you can combat with lots of language classes, but it's just something that takes time. And it's probably something that is worthwhile remembering, that this emotional part of the settlement probably that is related to language, but also to more, and just something that really just takes time. I mean, it's not like you land, you arrive, is one thing, but to actually arrive at a place emotionally is a completely different issue, and it can take years. So, and probably one of the good things about the AMEP is not only that, you know, you provide a place for meeting people, and you provide a place for emotional service, you know, you can make connections, and you can learn the language, and you can move, and the chances of success, but also to be able to handle all the failures that everybody will experience. And I think that's probably one of the most important things, to help people get up again and just go out and do it again if they needed to. Most of those people who claim to have, who have overcome their inhibitions, they often have suddenly they managed to do something, and that was awesome. So for example, get a job, make a friend, managed to get a bargain off a shopkeeper, and one of them, she was very cute. Well, actually, I don't know how to say. But she said, like, okay, in China, nobody is doing anything bad to me, but I came to Australia and I couldn't tell people off anymore. But she managed to do it this one time and she was really, really proud of herself. Most commonly mentioned difficulties are talking and listening on the phone, so that's one of the main themes. Language use in the family could have a great impact on the settlement experience, so that's probably not something to be underestimated, really. And, well, that's pretty much it. Well, thank you.